ultimately will die from the consequences of extreme weather events, coastal inundation, all of these impacts that are made worse by the, you know, the warming of the planet that's due to the burning of fossil fuels, the burning of fossil fuels by the very companies and plutocrats and petrostates that are behind the policies of this administration.
Said, not since the ransacking of the Library of Alexandria have we witnessed such a wanton, intentional assault on scientific knowledge. We have 30 seconds, Professor Mann.
Yeah, it's a line from my commentary. And, you know, there's some question as to the veracity of that story. But I think it captures sort of the insanity of what we're doing. We're literally destroying knowledge. And we have to look back to ancient times to see, you know, eras similar, you know, when barbarians tried to destroy knowledge. That's what this administration is doing. They're trying to destroy knowledge.
Michael Mann, professor at the University of Pennsylvania, co-author of the book Science Under Siege with Dr. Peter Hotez. We will link to your new piece out today in The Guardian. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our video news production and digital fellowship programs. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, Safwat Nizal, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st.
Is autism an epidemic? Or is it a superpower? Are you a little bit on the spectrum? Or are you hashtag actually autistic? I'm Carrie Stewart Lingle, host of NeuroEmergent. Join me from 11 a.m. to noon on the fourth Wednesday of every month to explore neurodiversity in the Pacific Northwest and beyond, right here on KBOO Community Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, taxpayers may get the cleanup bill for toxic oil and gas wells, thanks to a new proposal from the Trump administration.
The Oregon Department of Justice works to block construction of an ICE facility at the Newport Municipal Airport.
And, in more national news, the Trump administration wants to weaken the Endangered Species Act.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, December 22nd, 2025. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Jar Salem. The Trump administration's housing and urban development is cutting funding and changing policies that could increase homelessness in Multnomah County. As many as 800 households, which translates to more than 1,000 individuals, could suffer. Some $25 million that had previously been slated to address the region's homeless crisis appears lost. Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson said, quote, "It's a horrible thing to have to face as a community. We absolutely have a federal administration that is really trying to put forward policies that we know are going to harm people," end quote. The federal cuts come as rates of homelessness across the country surge to record levels. In November, HUD announced it would overhaul the Continuum of Care program. That's the government system that issues grants to address homelessness. Every year, Multnomah County applies for funding through this program, and that money is distributed among 15 local nonprofit organizations that operate housing and outreach programs. HUD cut the amount of funding available for permanent supportive housing programs for people who may be unable to live on their own due to a mental illness or disability. These programs also offer services to help people gain stability, such as on-site treatment programs or job training. HUD also introduced new requirements for housing programs. It mandated participation in substance abuse treatment programs and placed restrictions on operating clean needle exchanges. HUD also banned creating programs that benefit a certain race or gender. Many of these new federal requirements violate Multnomah County's own policies, which reflect equity goals once mandated by the same agency under previous presidential administrations. Just after HUD announced these changes, Oregon and 18 other states filed a legal challenge. On December 8th, a day before a hearing on that federal lawsuit, HUD withdrew its policy revisions to assess the issues raised by plaintiffs and make changes. Multnomah County officials say they do not believe HUD will follow through with those changes unless a court intervenes. County officials say they are preparing for the worst, but evaluating ways to use other funding sources, such as Metro's Supportive Housing Services Fund, to pay for threatened permanent housing programs. Officials say they will look to use whatever federal funding they receive to fill in the remaining gaps in their budget.
Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield sues the Trump administration over its attempt to pull funding from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He's joined by 21 other attorneys general. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis to make sure businesses and banks play by the rules. Initially, that was in response to the subprime mortgage crisis. But the Bureau also responds to things like health insurance, scams, bank schemes, junk credit card fees, among others. Attorney General Rayfield says the Bureau has played an important role in protecting everyday Americans.
This is an agency that has been working on behalf of everyone since 2011 and has provided more than $20 billion of funds back into the pockets of Americans. This is the same agency that stopped Wells Fargo when they were taking advantage of consumers without their consent and opening millions of accounts without consent. This is the same agency that stopped Navient, who was taking advantage of student loan borrowers. This is the same agency that protects people who have credit cards, payday lending, mortgages, you name it. This is the agency that's looking out on behalf of all of us.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is an independent agency with a unique funding mechanism from the Federal Reserve, intended to keep it out of the reach of politicians. But now, the Trump administration has put forward what California Attorney General Rob Bonta calls a very flawed legal opinion to effectively shut down the Bureau. The opinion says that the Consumer Protection Bureau can decide not to request its annual funding from the Federal Reserve. If that idea is violated in court, the Consumer Protection Bureau will run out of money next month. Rayfield says the defunding attempt by the Trump administration is part of a larger pattern, but not what elected officials are supposed to be doing.
I'm just going to say what's on a lot of people's mind is, what the heck is the president thinking right now? We as elected officials, our job is to protect consumers. Our job is to protect our constituents. Our job is to look out for people in our communities. Our job is not to seek creative, nuanced, lawyerly ways to defund the agencies that were designed to protect all of us. But that's what's going on. And this is a consistent message from our president. This is a consistent agenda from our president, who is focused on reworking our economy. And all you got to do is look at the pattern to see how this is an attack on working Americans.
The lawsuit asks the court to stop the Trump administration plan to pull funds from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It was filed this afternoon in the U.S. District Court in Eugene.
The Oregon Department of Justice is working to block a shadowy attempt by the Trump administration to open an immigration detention center in Newport. Lawyers for the state sought an injunction from U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken last week. Their lawsuit started out as a way to force the Coast Guard to keep its rescue helicopter at the Newport Airport. State leaders and advocates believe it was moved to make room for a detention center at the airport. State lawyers say the federal government is skirting environmental and coastal land use regulations. The lawsuit reads in part, quote, defendants have engaged in these efforts behind closed doors, with no transparency or public process, ignoring direct requests for information from local officials and members of Congress. As a result, the state has been forced to piece together defendants' plans for the ICE detention facility based on public reporting, inquiries to, and information from federal contractors, the secondhand account of a U.S. Coast Guard witness, and related evidence, end quote. Judge Aiken ordered the helicopter to remain at Newport's Municipal Airport while the lawsuit about relocating it goes on. The lawsuit is among a number of ways coastal Oregonians have resisted federal immigration overreach in their community. Newport residents turned out in droves to city council meetings, clarifying their opposition. Waltport residents succeeded in getting a local resort owner to pledge not to house future ICE agents at their hotel. Advocates in Lincoln City say they may engage in a public accountability campaign for Coast residents who take federal contracting jobs with the ICE facility. Federal contractors who spoke anonymously with the outlet notice said there's no way they could meet federal standards of care at the Newport Airport location.
Oil and gas companies will have less obligation to clean up spent wells on public lands, according to plans announced by the Trump administration. Experts estimate that shifting the cost of cleanup of the toxic wells to taxpayers in Oregon and across the country would cost over $750 billion. KBOO's Carmel Pierre-Louis has more.
The Trump administration has announced its intent to weaken the rules that require oil and gas companies to clean up and plug wells that are no longer in use on public lands. The U.S. has more than 130,000 abandoned oil and gas wells on public lands across the country, which can leak methane and other harmful gases into the air and waterways if they aren't plugged. David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, says it will cost taxpayers about $753 billion to clean up the wells.
We have an administration that is deciding to side with scammers over hardworking American taxpayers and choosing to do something that's fiscally irresponsible. There's nothing conservative about it.
Due to a thick layer of basalt covering much of the state, Oregon has a relatively small number of oil and gas wells compared to other states. However, Jenkins emphasizes that federal funds will be used to plug orphaned wells, so the problem impacts every taxpayer. Jenkins explains that there are an average of 12 wells per lease, and cleaning them up requires plugging the well and removing all of the equipment. He says when oil and gas companies get close to the end of their production cycle, they'll often sell the well to a smaller company who will extract the last bit of oil. Then that company will sell it to another company.
And then that shell company is just designed to go bankrupt. And then that's how they get away with leaving taxpayers holding the bag. It's like a giant shell game.
Jenkins adds it was just last year that a new law made oil and gas companies put up a bond that would cover the cost of cleaning up the wells before they started drilling. He says the planned rollback follows the recently passed One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which opened more than 200 million acres of public land to drilling. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Carmel Pierre-Louis.
Caregivers in Washington State largely rely on Apple Health for their income, and their clients rely on it for their health insurance. In response to significant federal cuts to Medicaid, expected to lead to 350,000 Washingtonians losing their health insurance, caregivers are speaking out on behalf of themselves and the people they serve. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Washington's Caregivers Union is denouncing federal cuts to Medicaid, known in the state as Apple Health, which are expected to result in 350,000 residents losing health insurance and the possible closure of over a dozen rural hospitals. About 60% of nursing home residents and 40% of adults with disabilities rely on Medicaid in Washington. Brenda Morgan is on the board with SEIU 775, the Caregivers Union, and has been a caregiver for about 23 years. She helps her client with daily tasks like dressing, bathing, and transportation, and she worries about how the cuts will impact her.
Seeing her suffer, seeing her so worried about what HR 1 will do, it breaks my heart. So I told her, as long as I can, I will continue fighting for her and for every person that needs to be on Medicaid.
SEIU 775 represents over 55,000 caregivers across Washington, Montana, and Alaska, and many of the members rely on Medicaid funding for their livelihood. The cuts passed in July through H.R. 1, otherwise known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, are the largest cuts to Medicaid in history, totaling over $700 billion. They're expected to take health insurance away from nearly 14 million people nationally. Proponents of the cuts argue it's necessary to reduce wasteful spending. Gloria B. has been a caretaker of her father for 4 years. She says he depends on Medicaid to pay for his chemotherapy, and she doesn't understand why the cuts need to be so drastic.
That doesn't make any sense to me. These people worked for a long time. They retired. They need a way to be able to sustain themselves.
Proponents of Medicaid say H.R. 1 also makes it harder for people to enroll and stay enrolled by creating more red tape and adding work requirements. A poll from earlier this year found 97% of adults in the U.S. believe Medicaid is at least somewhat important for their community. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Congress leaves D.C. for the year with unfinished business on the table. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, Republican, New York, ends her New York gubernatorial bid. And the state of Maryland pushes forward with its voter redistricting plans. With that story and more, it's Mary Sherman with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We were able to unlock the SNAP funding for the remainder of the year, WIC funding for the remainder of the year, veterans funding for the remainder of the year, Capitol Police for the remainder of the year.
Republican Alabama Senator Katie Britt says the GOP-led Senate temporarily settled important funding questions before adjourning for the year. But Congress did not act to extend expiring health insurance subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, meaning premiums for about 22 million Americans will rise sharply next month. California Democratic Congressman Dave Min says many families will have to drop down to a cheaper plan with fewer benefits or go without coverage altogether.
What we're talking about is thousands of dollars a month for working families in my district.
New York Representative Elise Stefanik is ending her campaign for governor and won't seek re-election to Congress. The ally of President Donald Trump says a challenging GOP primary could hurt Republicans' chances in an uphill statewide contest. She'll finish out her term, but she's joining a number of prominent Republicans leaving the House. That includes Georgia's Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is leaving office next month, and first-term Wyoming Senator Cynthia Lummis. A federal appeals court heard arguments Friday in a civil suit against Trump for his role in the January 6th Capitol attack. Oakland Mayor Barbara Lee was a member of the House at the time and is the lead plaintiff.
The peaceful transfer of power was almost thwarted on January 6th, but it prevailed. And that's a testament to the strength of our democracy, but the fact that we must be vigilant.
Lee says she's optimistic about the hearing, which was to determine if Trump has immunity from being sued. Meanwhile, a new Republican-led subcommittee investigating January 6th will hold its first hearing next month as the party tries to change the record on the attack. The new probe will look at the investigation by a previous Democratically-led committee. Maryland is taking new steps towards redistricting, with a state committee voting to solicit proposals for a new congressional map. That follows similar efforts in California and Virginia to counter Republican gains in Texas, Missouri, and North Carolina. Democrats currently hold 7 of Maryland's 8 congressional seats. Opponents of the mid-decade redistricting argue it could actually put safe Democratic seats back in play in next year's election or fail to hold up against a Republican legal challenge. University of Maryland political scientist Melia Cromer says 4 out of 5 voters tell them purposefully redrawing districts to favor one political party is a, quote, major problem for American democracy.
It's a big ask to go through or to push through this mid-cycle redistricting when it's really uncertain whether Maryland could actually pick up a seat.
The Coast Guard has seized a second tanker carrying Venezuelan oil. The New York Times says the vessel is not on the U.S. sanctions list. The Times reports that Panamanian-flagged vessel was operated by a Chinese company that ships oil to refineries in China. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, listen in for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with a chance of light rain. We'll see lows in the mid-40s. Tomorrow, expect more of the same. Clouds with a chance of morning rain. The highs will be in the mid to upper 40s. Today in history, in 2001, British extremist Richard Reid hid bombs in his shoes for a flight from Paris to Miami. They failed to ignite due to damp condition, but Reid's attempt did lead to your needing to remove your shoes before flying for almost 20 years. The quote of the day is from an unknown author who said, "Chocolate is good, but shoes are carb-free."
Before the year's end, President Donald Trump is expected to sign a bill that would give Alaska Native veterans an extension to file for their native allotments. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Before the year's end, President Trump is expected to sign a bill that would give Alaska Native veterans an extension to file for their native allotments. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, more time is needed to help veterans navigate what they say has been a cumbersome and frustrating process.
After several failed attempts to get the Senate to pass an extension, the window for Alaska Native veterans to claim federal land was about to close forever. But on December 16th, Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan's bill passed by unanimous consent. The Republican senator had tied the veterans' extension to three other bills that had bipartisan support.
It wasn't easy, but we got this done at the buzzer. It's going to be signed into law. It's going to go over to the White House. The president's going to sign this, and we're going to get to work and get these heroes the land allotments that they deserved.
Ben O'Cleveland, president of the Alaska Native Veterans Council, has waited for this moment for a long time.
I felt very happy, content within the heart. We've been battling with the Alaska Native Vietnam Veterans land allotment for over 30 years.
The extension now gives Alaska Native veterans until 2030 to claim 160 acres of federal land, made available to them under a law Congress passed more than 100 years ago. But when the federal program ended in 1971, Vietnam vets missed out because many were overseas fighting the war. An estimated 2,000 veterans are eligible for this program, but as of mid-month, only about 25% had filed. Native vets said they had difficulty meeting the deadline due to a complicated process and limited land availability. Cleveland hopes the extension will allow more time to convince Congress to make more federal land available for veterans closer to their homelands. He says they deserve it.
We've gone through hell, but we went when our country called, and we did our duty to the nation and to our people.
Cleveland says it's a shame politics gets in the way of honoring veterans, but the important thing, he says, is that Congress finally got the job done. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A Wisconsin tribe is suing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. As Danielle Kading reports, the Bad River tribe has filed a lawsuit to overturn a federal permit for a Canadian energy firm's plans to reroute its oil and gas pipeline.
Earth Justice attorney Gussie Lord represents the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Lord claims the Army Corps violated federal environmental laws when it issued a permit this fall to Canadian energy firm Enbridge. She says the agency failed to adequately review environmental effects of the company's plans to build a 41-mile segment of its Line 5 pipeline around the tribe's reservation.
They didn't do that in a number of ways, including threat of oil spill, threat of impacts to on and off reservation exercise of treaty rights, and also the state's water quality certification has been challenged by the band, and that's not final.
Enbridge wants to build a new stretch of Line 5 after the tribe sued in 2019 to shut down the pipeline on its lands. Bad River Tribal Chairwoman Elizabeth Arbuckle said the tribe and other communities would, quote, suffer unacceptable consequences in the event of an oil spill. An Enbridge spokesperson said the company's permit is not yet final, but it plans to defend the Corps' upcoming decision in the lawsuit. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
On Friday, a jury ruled in favor of the Native-led organization Indian Collective and individual plaintiffs in a discrimination lawsuit against the owners of the Grand Gateway Hotel in Rapid City, South Dakota. Indian Collective will be paid $1, a request made by the organization. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Alaska's vast natural beauty supports a lucrative outdoor industry, but many anglers and hunters fear that it could be redeveloped by the mining industry or other commercial interests. Mark Richardson reports.
Hunters and anglers treasure Alaska's vast outdoors for its beauty and bounty, but many fear for the future of the state's public lands. Christy Hoyne, who lives in southeast Alaska, a lifelong outdoors enthusiast, focuses primarily on salmon fishing. Hoyne manages programs for defenders of wildlife. She says she learned to fish by spending time with her father and grandfather and values the memories and stewardship that were passed down to her.
I don't think that I would even be where I am today if it wasn't for my background in fishing, because it really revolutionized my experience with the landscape. So I came up to Alaska, and boy, if you want the mecca of being outside, Alaska's the place to do it. And that was 2020, and I haven't left.
Hoyne finds fishing both challenging and rewarding, and says that while she has fished for many kinds of fish, she finds Alaska's salmon the most challenging. She adds that it's important to take care of the state's natural resources and says there are important ways to preserve the outdoors through conservation. Alaska's outdoor recreation sector is a massive economic engine, adding more than $3 billion to the state's GDP and supporting over 20,000 jobs. However, Hoyne says the state's economy could suffer under plans to begin developing in pristine, roadless areas. She argues it's a risk to alter the state's public lands for use by commercial interests.
If we remove these protections of the roadless areas, then you've got development, you've got roads, you've got runoff and pollution, sedimentation, damaged culverts. You're just setting yourself for failure when it comes to fishing habitat and fishing stream.
Hoyne says salmon fishing is a mainstay of the state's economy, with nearly 195 million salmon harvested in Alaska during the 2025 season. She says fishing for salmon and other species is also a large part of the state's indigenous cultural heritage.
People in the Southeast realize we don't want development. We want a healthy ecosystem. If you talk to any Southeast Alaskan resident, they will say, "What's the most important thing to you?" They'll say salmon.
For Alaska News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
The Trump administration is proposing to significantly weaken the Endangered Species Act, and the public comment period on regulations.gov ends at midnight tonight, Monday. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Today is the last day to register public comments on the Trump administration's proposed changes to the Endangered Species Act for people in California and across the U.S. The new rules would make it easier to take a species off the endangered list and harder to add new species or designate critical habitat. They would also weaken federal oversight of development projects in sensitive areas. Rabbi Daniel Swartz with the Coalition on the Environment and Jewish Life says petitions opposing the changes have attracted signatures from more than 9,000 Christian evangelicals and 1,000 leaders of many faiths.
It's something that we naturally gravitate towards in terms of just valuing life around us. And while we each approach it through the lens of our particular faith tradition, there's that shared sense of awe and wonder at the world and appreciating it as an expression of the divine.
The Department of the Interior says the revisions are consistent with President Donald Trump's directives to strengthen American energy independence and improve regulatory predictability. Specifically, it would eliminate the blanket rule that automatically gives newly listed threatened species the same protections as endangered species unless a species-specific rule is written. To add their voice to the debate on this issue, people can go to the public comment section of regulations.gov by the end of the day today. Swartz says environmental protection benefits humans, not just animals and plants.
When you harm the environment, the people who get hurt first and foremost are the most vulnerable, and that's precisely who we're told to take care of in faith traditions: the widow, the orphan, the stranger, the ones whose voices have been ignored.
In October, Governor Gavin Newsom signed Assembly Bill 1319, which directs the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to provisionally list species if it finds that decreased federal protections would substantially impact federally listed species. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Overconsumption can lead to overspending and harm to the climate. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
With holiday music, festive decorations, and enticing ads everywhere, it's easy to get swept up in the excitement of the season and buy more food and gifts than you need. And online shopping provides even more temptation.
It's so easy, just a click of the button, and here it comes.
But Catherine Roster of the University of New Mexico Anderson School of Management warns that overbuying during the holidays can lead to credit card debt. And it harms the climate because making and shipping unused goods wastes resources and emits carbon pollution. So Roster suggests making a budget and sticking to it. And if you find yourself adding too many items to an online shopping cart, stop and walk away.
Let them sit for 24 hours and then think about whether that was really the right thing and what you really want to do.
She says friends and family may appreciate sharing an experience with you or receiving something handmade more than a store-bought gift.
I think if you take time to think about the things in your life and the people in your life that are most important to you, that there's a lot of better ways to honor those relationships and to make people feel appreciated and feel the real spirit of the holiday.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking stories, news, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Carmel Pierre-Louis, Dave Johnson, and Althea Billings. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Mary Sherman, Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Mark Richardson, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm.